Okay, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the show. I'm Chuck Anderson. Today it's my privilege to be in Edgemont, South Dakota, and I'm at the home of Caroline Curl, who is a longtime resident of this city. And we have some other interesting people. We have Maurice Neville. Am I saying that right, Maurice?
Correct.
Maurice is a member of the council of the city of Edgemont. He's been with them for 3.5 years. He's currently a facilitator. He writes grants, and before that he had a plumbing and appliance center right here in Edgemont. And we have Trudy Dibble. And Trudy, we're holding the paper that she works for right here. It's called the Edgemont Tribune. And Trudy, I want to make sure that I welcome you to the show. Thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
And Maurice, thank you, sir.
You bet. We appreciate it.
And our longtime resident, Caroline, and we're at your house, and we thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad you come. I'm glad to say something good for Edgemont.
Well, that's the reason that we're doing this show, and I'm so glad to have this opportunity to be going through the Black Hills today. Seldom do they let me out of here, and I get out about twice a year, and then that's usually to Woolsey, and that's only about 12, 14 miles away. I'm just teasing you, Caroline. We hear on the AP wire service a lot of real gruesome horror stories about Edgemont, and we're here right now to tell the people out there that there is certainly another side to the story. As I have driven through this country really since the 1940s, I have loved Edgemont, and I have never quite understood the black picture that the media seems to put on this part of South Dakota. But if you've never been through Edgemont, let me just draw you a little map right now, because we're right on the Cheyenne River, the beautiful valley that goes through, and we're here in October, and I know the show won't be aired until November, but it's been a beautiful fall, and I think it's just a beautiful place. Edgemont has probably the most ideal exploration in some of the Midwest. You've been the center of uranium exploration. You've been the center of many things, some quite controversial. But also, you have the size of this city. As I look out in this broad valley, you guys could be a city of 100,000 people and have all sorts of room left over, Maurice.
Correct.
So we're looking at a beautiful location. You have the Burlington Northern Railroad that goes through here. You have all sorts of things that are working for you. It's a scenic town. And first, I want to thank Trudy for putting together our little group here today, and she had a wonderful story. Would you share that with us? You went to a hospital.
Yes, I was in a neighboring town at a major hospital, and the lady was conversing with me and asked me where I was from, and this was shortly after SDDS was quite controversial then, and they wanted to come to town, and the lady asked where I was from. I said Edgemont, and she goes, where they want to bury all that garbage, isn't that going to be terrible? And I started to laugh, and I wanted to make funny faces, but I contained myself. And as Maurice can tell you, that's pretty hard for me to do.
And they think that you'd glow in the dark here.
Yes, my dad had a T-shirt that said, "Hell no, we don't glow, Edgemont, South Dakota."
Well, we've kind of gotten ahead of the story.
Yeah.
Actually, it goes back, the real prominence of this city of Edgemont, and it's just wonderful. And you may think I'm joking, I have loved this part of the state for a long, long time. You originally became prominent in the eyes of the federal government and the Defense Department when they needed a very centrally located ordnance depot, or let's say munitions. We can talk to the public that way. It had to be in the central part of the country. It had to be well protected away from populated areas, because we found out later on they stored certainly a lot more stuff there here than just bombs. We're going to talk about that. And in fact, they're still finding stuff around here, and it's the reason that they're in the news so much.
Yeah.
I want to talk to Maurice right now. The Black Hills Ordnance Depot, these folks came to you during World War II in 1942, and even though it's Igloo, all of this is just kind of part of Edgemont. And what happened out here? What did they do with this countryside?
Probably some of the most massive development in a drastically short period of time that the whole state of South Dakota will ever see. They built an entire community, hospitals, schools, sewage, water systems. and that hospitals, the entire gamut of that was needed to support a community. Plus, they built hundreds of cement igloos and railroad track to each one.
Describe the igloo, because I have still yet to see the first one. So explain to me what they look like.
An igloo is a cement bunker partially buried in the ground, about 50 feet wide, and I would guess around 120 to 50 feet deep. Then they have large steel doors, double doors on the front, and then they are covered with a good layer of dirt over the top then. And they are ventilated, but they're quite explosive proof and could be protected. They were not obvious from the air, I guess is the one of the biggest things at the time. And plus they gave good protection for the munitions that were stored inside.
We have a few comments I heard from our old resident here. Oh. They developed wells.
Yeah, they dug. They had a well, deep well, at Igloo for the water supply, and I guess it's still operating, isn't it?
And talking of water, you guys have one of the most unique water systems, I think, in the whole country. First of all, what temperature did that water come out at?
Right here in Edgemont, we have five separate wells. They all flow large quantities of water, and the water comes out of the ground at around 120 degrees temperature.
Wow.
When it surfaces. So we have warm water all the time. We have large volumes of it. We've never experienced a real water shortage here. We've just done some things to cool our water and make more of it available, so that we probably have one of the most reasonable water rates in the whole nation right here in Edgemont.
Just another reason that I can't understand why this place hasn't been discovered. You mentioned, Trudy, that something about this hot water, it's the only place you can, what is it?
Oh, I don't think I better repeat that comment I made before this.
Okay. Well, it had to do that if you had to take a bath, almost any tap in town will do it for you.
That is correct.
We have Trudy blushing right over there. It never ceases out here. I'm looking at your front page paper that came out. Right here it says, Phase 1, Final Work Plans of Former Depot Cleanup. Here we have another front line headline. It says, District Landfill Public Hearing to be Held. Residents Request Discussed. We have all sorts of things that are happening here in Edgemont. It shows that the people are very concerned. But getting back to where you made the national prominence as a ordnance depot. Now, years go by and the government decides, hey, we don't need that anymore. We aren't at war. What happened?
When the war was over and they started to consolidate the wartime effort, cut it back, Edgemont happened to be one of the depots that they decided they could phase out. And consequently, very shortly, they did this. They moved the munitions out, they disbanded the facility, and were gone.
How big was Edgemont, roughly, at that time, do you think, population-wise?
In this book that I just read yesterday that I told you about, it said around 1,000, 1,400 people, something like that. I'm guessing about 1,400 is what the book said. If
we're going to check with their authority, Caroline. Does that sound pretty close, Caroline?
Well, when they come to build Igloo, we had almost overnight 50,000 people here.
Wow!
And people lived in chicken coops.
Let's say that again. That's 50,000 people almost overnight.
Yes, and I've got pictures in the Centennial book where they had tents and little trailer houses in everybody's backyard and down in the park and living in coal sheds and chicken coops and back porches.
Do you remember those days?
Yes.
Yeah. You were born here when?
I was born here in 1914.
Okay, and you're just as sharp. I'm the shabby-looking dressed one here. I was out trout fishing this morning, and everyone else really looked sharp. Here the journalist comes up, and I'm really the shabby-looking guy. Now, here's the interesting thing now, Maurice. Now we're going to see the demise of this city, they pull this out. But did they do anything like in the years later? They have a thing called federal impact area. They wouldn't dream of doing this to a community without lacing you with about $100 million to take care of you for the years down. Did they do anything for you?
At the time Igloo disbanded and the population moved out, unfortunately, there weren't a lot of these programs that were in effect.
Roughly what years are we talking about? Just roughly, Maurice.
67, it phased out.
Okay, thank our expert over there.
Yeah, that's right. And they just left. That was it. They pulled out and left.
It must have been devastating to the business people.
Well, it certainly was. When you have this large a population that is contributing to the welfare of the community consistently, and they're gone practically overnight, it depresses it considerably. But on the other hand, we were left with a good core community that was able to regroup and look ahead. We've always had the railroad here. We've got a good agriculture base here. Also, at that time, the uranium mining in the area was becoming quite an item.
That's where we're going to take a break right now, Maurice. Excuse me for interrupting. We're looking at Caroline's my engineer right now, and she says that's the end of this segment. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. And 3, 2, 1. We're back. I want to thank Caroline. She is really making sure that this clock gets turned on and that our time is just correct. We're broadcasting from Edgemont, South Dakota, and it's really my thrill and it's my honor to be here. I have stopped over the years, really, since the 1940s, and I've watched the progress, or maybe the opposite of it, happen to Edgemont, and I have never quite ever figured out why. And we have some people that possibly be able to tell me. And we're going to talk the other side of the issue of Edgemont is a good community, regardless of what the AP wire service may have on it or the horror stories that people tell about it. With me right now is Maurice Neville. He is a councilman with the city of Edgemont, been with them for 3.5 years, used to have a plumbing and appliance center, and right now is a grants facilitator. We have from the newspaper, and we'll certainly want to give them a plug, the Edgemont Tribune, and it's a weekly. And let's just give the address. It's a good newspaper. I was looking at it, and if people want to subscribe to it, you just tell them how to do it, Trudy.
Well, I hate to correct you, but it's the Edgemont Herald Tribune.
Oh, okay.
And we're located at Box 660, Edgemont, South Dakota. And do I dare give subscription rates?
If you want, hey, anything goes here in Edgemont.
$20 to the state of South Dakota, $25 anywhere else.
Okay. And it's because of Trudy that we were able to put these wonderful people together. And, of course, the person that's going to keep us honest to make sure that we aren't saying something that we shouldn't be is our longtime resident. Wow, I got to write that born down. Born in 1914, and right around here, Caroline?
Yes, about 10 miles up Red Canyon in a log house.
Okay. I have a very dear friend that preached out here many years ago. I wonder if you remember him, Ken Moreland. Did you know a pastor, Ken Moreland?
I knew a Marlin.
That's close. Good enough. Let's give her the prize and let's move on. So now we had up to 50,000 people. This is staggering to my mind. You were probably the biggest city in the state at one time.
No, did I say 50?
Well, 50,000. Oh, should we amend it?
Well, it did go back to about 10,000.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's a lot of people. Yeah. A lot of people to have.
But that was when the building and everything was going on.
Yes.
There were all kinds of builders, and then the
and
government.
Tent City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tent City. And the business office was set up in the Edgemont Armory.
Wouldn't you have liked to have seen that, Maurice, with 50,000 people here?
Well, it had to be something. I know the story goes that people that had a room in their home they could rent out for a sleeping room would rent this at 3 shifts a day. You rented it for an 8-hour shift to sleep there, and somebody else followed
okay.
8 hours later. Yeah. So
like the old ghost town, or the boom towns, the mining towns.
Correct.
Boom town.
That's right.
And so it was a crowded village for a while.
So the government says, with their Black Hills Ordnance Depot, we don't need you anymore, and they just sort of pulled out. Well, we'll have to come back to this because we've had some problems.
I just wanted to tell you one of the reasons that I read yesterday why they pulled out was that they said the ordinance was obsolete, that they didn't use that ordinance anymore.
What'd they do with it?
I saw a picture. They loaded up in rail cars and hauled it away. Where to, I do not know. But the picture in the book showed that.
We had more than bombs.
Yes, there was mustard gas and various other things out there.
Yeah. We're going to get back to that because people are still finding odd stuff out here, or they claim that they are. They claim that they are.
Well, they buried a lot of stuff. You know, they buried some of the stuff.
Well, no. See, I didn't know that. Let's tell everybody in our four-state listening area what they did. Trudy says they hauled it out.
Well, they did, but some of it
maybe a couple of miles and then buried.
No. It was things that wasn't going to keep. You know,
like.
Well, I don't know what you would call them. But
bombs or something.
Yeah. See, because my husband worked out there then, and I know that that's what they were doing, but I don't know what they did.
Does anyone know where this stuff is buried?
Well, they have a map. The Corps of Engineers has a map that shows where a lot of it was buried. I think there's misconception there that they buried live ammunition. I believe that it was exploded or, you know, blown up before it was buried. And so, yes, people have found fragments or shrapnel, whatever you want to call it, out there. Have they ever found something live? Well, I think that's debatable.
Have they, Caroline?
I doubt that I know of.
Maurice?
No, I wouldn't verify that. There have been a lot of different things found. I guess you need to appreciate when you have an operation of this magnitude, there are bound to have been some things that nobody knew happened, even within the military at that time, that they buried, disposed of. But they did have regular disposal areas where they exploded munitions. They disassembled a lot of the armament here, reassembled it, and there was disposal. This is what, over the years, we've come to a point now in time where the Corps of Engineers is going back in, reassessing, evaluating, and trying to establish what did happen here. The records that have been kept, they find, are not even complete. They don't know what was here and what was buried here, what wasn't buried here. This is what they're trying to establish now. And as far as...
As a journalist, now let me just interrupt for a minute, Maurice. As a journalist, I always smell a story. And when the government says, I think we've misplaced some of those records, I mean, I always become suspicious. But continue on.
This is true. And I certainly wouldn't argue the point one way or the other, but we do know that as some of these different elements have been gathered over the last year through the Corps of Engineers, they've had some very large difficulties trying to identify just what they were or what they were a component of and so forth. They couldn't get a hold of the records, so where they are or what they are, I won't comment any further because I certainly don't know.
The old-timers, going back to World War II in 1942, when, of course, this was a strategic spot for the military, for the United States, very strategic. Inland enough, it didn't have to worry about being bombed right away by Japanese or German rockets or bombers. Did you know, did the local people know that you had mustard gas and poison gas stored here?
I don't think I did.
Wow.
I don't think I did. I knew that there was a lot of munitions stored out there, but you don't know what they have.
Well, see, I'm certainly no expert from here and from eastern South Dakota. I always believed that it was munitions, you know, blow-up bomb type of stuff that was out here. And some years ago when the reports came out about the poison gas, I was really quite horrified because I never knew that they had it out here to start with. Mm-mm. And you kind of verified that at the time.
Well, I didn't know, and I know that my husband helped to load and unload ammunition out here, both when it came in and went out. And there was all kinds of big shells, that type of stuff. I know, you know, but he wasn't allowed always to talk about what went on.
Does this sort of go with your research, Trudy? Did the people know that there was poisonous gas stored here at the time?
I really couldn't comment on that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long I've really realized that they had that out there. I mean, and I don't remember being really shocked, when I heard that they had mustard.
I was.
I was shocked.
Well, because maybe that I had already read it or something. I don't know why.
It softened it a little bit.
My dad worked out there when they were closing down Eagle. He was a fireman out there.
Was that right?
And I'm by that time, you know, he was actually in the final phase of taking down fences and that sort of thing. And so, you know, maybe by that time they were a little bit more open about what was going on. I don't know.
Reese?
I believe maybe that we need to clarify a few things here. First of all, we need to look at the times. We started this in 42, ran up through the mid to late 60s. Things were viewed different at that time. When we spoke of ordnance, this was a broad field. It was everything that was needed to conduct a military operation as far as shells, bombs, gases, etc. This was all ordnance. I myself do not know of anything that was ever described specifically stating that this depot was just for bombs or shells. It was an ordnance depot. Today, if we were to look at this, yes, we would have a chemical or biological storage facility.
That's right.
We would have a munitions storage facility.
$1 billion cleanup fund.
et cetera. You know, that we would be segregated.
You would be the richest state probably, the city in the Midwest right now.
But at the time, it was an ordnance depot, and they stored ordnance.
So
this is a broad gamut of things that could possibly be here.
And I have personally, this is just my personal thought as a journalist, I think a lot of people have forgotten about you, and they wanted to forget about you. That's people in authority from the federal government on down. And someday, Trudy, I do believe their conscience is going to catch up with them. I believe it.
Oh, well, I do too. I think it's already beginning. I don't think the Corps of Engineers would be involved right now if their conscience wasn't getting after them.
Let's get on to the uranium now. Maurice, you had mentioned the uranium. This is phase two of the significance of this part of the nation. We needed in our nuclear arsenal, we needed uranium, and they discovered it here.
This is correct. It was discovered here, also at several points just to the west of us in Wyoming. Edgemont had the first milling facility in the area. They received not only the ores from the local area, but also from Wyoming in the early stages of development. Uranium employed a lot of people locally. It brought in a lot of outside employment. So it tend to save some of the shock that came with the closing of the depot.
Our production director, Ed Curley, you are wonderful. That's why we're paying you the big dollars today. You've got us right on. We're going to take a little break. This is fascinating, and we're going to go beyond uranium in a little bit to ash and garbage and stuff. Anyway, we'll be back in 60 seconds. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. 3, 2, 1. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. Our show is broadcasting from Edgemont, South Dakota today, and this is the point in the program where I want to thank all of you out there for listening. We appreciate our listeners, and we appreciate the comments that you give to me, and that's a wonderful, wonderful letters and phone calls that I get, and I listen, and I thank you very much for being with us. Now at Edgemont, we've talked about a city, at least in the viewpoint of Chuck Anderson, that has enormous promise, and of late, like the last several decades, all you guys seem to run into are these con artists that want to come out and promise you some sort of a rainbow, and they dump enormous liabilities upon this community, and that's what we keep reading about with the wire service stories, the television, the news media coverage. But before we give the wonderful accolade about Edgemont, which we'll do down towards the end, and wonderful schools and everything, Caroline, that I know that you want to speak about, let's get back to the radiation part. We had uranium discovered in the early to mid 1950s in the Edgemont area. It was originally and I can't say the name of this mine that originally discovered it and worked it out.
Well, there were a number of different individuals that discovered uranium. It wasn't a company that discovered this. This was done by individuals prospecting. Susquehanna Western was one of the first corporations that came in as far as development of a mill facility and consolidating this issue, and then it developed from there.
And we're listening to Maurice Nivelle, who is on the, who's a councilman. Is this an aldermanic form of government? I forgot to answer.
Correct.
That. Okay, you have a strong, that's a, called a strong mayor and a city council form.
That's right.
And Sioux Falls is kind of going that direction. Maybe they've waited for all these years to get kind of caught up with you. The uranium, before we leave this aspect, Trudy, any besides the stories, you don't really glow here, do you?
No, we don't glow. We're about as normal as you can find in any place.
And then what happened to that? I guess we just didn't have the big strategic need for it at that time. Anybody?
Well, the demand for nuclear power in power plants, etc., was the big calling card for digging uranium. It wasn't necessarily for bombs. Bombs are developed from byproduct of other used uranium sources, etc. So the big demand was in the power plant field generating electricity, etc. The controversy that arose over the nuclear power and all the, they quit building this type of facilities, we didn't have the need for uranium. There was no more demand. When you couldn't sell it, it had to stop.
Now there's stories that there's uranium dust blowing around. You've heard this for about 40, 50 years out here, Caroline. Yeah, look out, there's uranium dust blowing everywhere. Has this been taken care of? It has it been properly disposed of, the trailings?
I feel very comfortable with it. I have no problem. I have very, very, very good friends. Many of them in their late 80s lived here all of their life that I can't see where it's affected them. They're just as pert and sharp as can be. Yes, as far as the mill facility and all went, it was managed at the end by a subsidiary of TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority. They did an exceptional job of cleaning up the mill site. Also, they went through the community, any location where fill dirt or anything had been moved in that they felt might be contaminated. They cleaned that all up. We've had an exceptional cleanup here.
So you don't know of anybody that's glowing? You don't know of anything?
No, I believe if a person wanted to, they could go to any community in the West River area and find higher background readings of radiation than you would right here in Edgemont.
And you don't know of anybody probably that's going out and blowing himself up with one of those shells that they talk about?
I've never heard any reports.
Let's dispel that right now. Do you know of any bombs that have blown up recently, Trudy?
My house rattled yesterday, but it wasn't a bomb. It was just a tree branch. So
You guys had strong winds out here yesterday.
Yeah, our weather yesterday was less than ideal. That is true.
Our real expert here, our longtime resident since 1914, you got anybody running around getting blown up with these bombs just laying around?
No.
This is false, right?
That's false. And there's one thing I'd like to say is that I grew up out in Red Canyon where there was a lot of uranium mined. I played on a lot of the rocks that were full of uranium, and I'm still around.
Well, and if we did some fast mathematics, I think we could all figure out how old you are being born in 1914. But we'll just pass that up. They've got to get their pencil and paper out, right?
They'll have to figure it. But I'm not
more than 40.
My aim. I'm not afraid, ashamed of it. You know, I feel God's given me a good life.
And he has. You have this wonderful home. You had this old kind of a quarry stone home that they needed for the highway, and they took it and gave you this?
Yeah.
Sort of?
We had worked on this old stone house that we had purchased, it's almost 50 years ago now. It will be in the spring. And we spent 35 years fixing it the way we wanted it. And then have it taken from us. It was kind of hard, and it did bring about, I think, caused my husband to lose his health because it upset him so badly.
So we've pretty well, Maurice, we've dispelled the uranium dust just floating around out here.
Correct. We have no problems.
Trudy, okay.
It's wonderful to be here.
Next came Kim Nuclear, dump for nuclear waste. What happened to those people?
The state of South Dakota voted them out of Edgemont.
Now, that was a referendum to all the people of the state of South Dakota.
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess that speaks for itself. We don't have to go any further there. Then we had SDDS, South Dakota Disposal Systems. They wanted to bring garbage in from Colorado, Minnesota, etc., and they promised they'd have it all bailed. And what happened there, Trudy?
it again was voted down by the state of South Dakota, and my personal opinion is that was a mistake. I don't really necessarily believe that SDDS was going to be a bad thing for Edgemont.
What was your thoughts, Caroline?
Well, I didn't either. I think it was a bad thing for Edgemont. It was, you know, we've all got garbage. We've got to do something with it. You can't just let it hang in the air.
Well, and also one of the people that was involved used to live here and still had relatives living in this town. I truly don't believe that man was going to do something that he truly felt would harm people that he knew and grew up with.
I think this is another case of a situation where maybe it was just a little premature in the development. Had this been brought online 5 years later when we came aware of the federal mandates for what garbage was going, how it was going to be handled, what we were going to have to do with it, it would have been accepted. They were making a large landfill to bury domestic household garbage. The state of South Dakota as a whole, when the referendum was brought forth, just felt that they didn't want somebody else's garbage. Well, at this point in time, we're well aware that we're going to have to do something as far as regional landfills and large facilities to handle our waste. The federal government has mandated this on us. So I feel that maybe part of this, it was a little premature. Awareness was not probably properly developed of what was happening. It was a combination of things that defeated this.
Then comes along Consolidated Management Corporation, known as CMC, and this is where we're starting to talk about the garbage that they had incinerated and they're going to bring ash in, and a lot of odd things happened, Maurice.
This is another issue that it was not garbage waste. This was municipal sewage ash. They incinerate their sewage instead of using a fluid flow. And they were bringing in the ash, which is very condensed form of the solids of the sewage. They wanted to remanufacture this, I guess we'll say. They had a process whereby they could remove the heavy metals, gold, platinum, etc., from this sewage and sell it, hopefully profitably. The process didn't quite come online. They missed their time frame. The state came in and shut them down.
But didn't the state originally support it?
Correct. They did.
Then they came in and shut it down.
Right. It's
now we're all kind of smiling here at the table.
Well, I really didn't really want to make a comment on CMC other than the fact that there's one thing, I don't know if you, Chuck, have noticed it, that there's a common factor in all these things that have come to Edgemont, and have you figured it out yet?
Let me guess.
It's the Burlington Northern Railroad. All these things were feasible because there was rail access, and that's still is what's supporting Edgemont is the Burlington Northern Railroad.
So, again, CMC is now it's defunct, right?
It's gone.
It's not viable. It's history. Okay. Now, I know that Caroline is going to point in about 30 seconds at this clock right here, and I appreciate that. We're going to just take a break right now. Again, we thank you people for being with us, staying with us. We wish all of you an I-90 and I-29 and all of you people out there doing your duck hunting and your goose hunting in Minnesota and northern Nebraska and northwestern Iowa. We thank you ever so much for your comments that come into the show. And we're going to be back. And we're going to talk about a really nice town. We're going to talk about the flip side of the coin that people don't see or hear about in Edgemont in 60 seconds. We'll be back. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson.
Did you realize that's why they finally picked? Okay.
Three, two, one. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson, the guest around the table, and my host, by the way, is Caroline Curl. She was born in 1914. We're in Edgemont, South Dakota right now, and we're just billing her as a longtime resident, and she has certainly kept us honest on some of the facts that came along. Also, we have Maurice Neville, He's on this, the city council with the city of Edgemont, and I want to thank so very much Trudy Dibble, who has also helped us out and corrected some of the things. And Maurice, thanks.
Thank you.
Trudy?
I'm glad to stop by today.
And Caroline?
And I'm glad you come.
Now, let's talk about a really beautiful part of South Dakota. I mean, you know, I've said this now, and you can tell right now that I haven't been putting it on since the 40s. I have looked at this part of South Dakota as truly a fantastic place. I'll tell you the one thing I'd like, and I've wanted to do for 30 years, Maurice, is when your water is right in the spring and early summer, I have always wanted to canoe the Cheyenne River all the way down to Angostura Dam. I thought that it would be a terrific and scenic trip. Does anyone ever do that?
We have a number of people every year that float the river and seem to enjoy it. They have a lot of fun at it, but there are a number of people that enjoy that.
I can tell you right now, the trout fishing is great because I was out the last several mornings that Chuck Anderson did very well with those German brown trout. You have a beautiful valley here for building sites far superior to anything else in the Black Hills because of the problems that Lee Deadwood ran into right off the bat when they suddenly wanted to bring all those big fancy casinos in. They didn't have any place to put them because they're landlocked with those mountains. And looking out in this valley, man, this valley must reach almost to Wyoming from here.
It does. We're very close to the border, and it stretches right up country. As far as people discovering us, we are slowly finding a lot of elderly people that are wanting to retire.
Great
have
place.
Moved to this community in the last 10 years, and we're seeing an increase in population again due to this, and we've got some very good citizens come from it.
And Trudy, you have got some buildings that I hope someone looks at very carefully and preserves them, because I know that there's talk about, I call it the old spa house, but what do they really call it?
Well, people here in town, I think, refer to it as the stone block. It used to be where people, it was a spa. They went there because of the hot waters, they spoke for healing or just to make them feel better or whatever. I'm sure Caroline can expound more on that, but it is a very nice old building from the outside, and I would love to have it be restored. It'd just be another focal point for people to come to see.
And when I stopped some years ago, I had lunch there, and I was really sad. I was going to go down. I had a wonderful chicken fried steak there. Mm-hmm. They used to have a restaurant in there, and I loved it.
Yeah, the Second Avenue Cafe or restaurant.
And it's not only that building, Maurice. As I drove into town, and I keep looking you guys over, maybe someday I'm going to move out here. I don't know. I just...
We need you.
You have all sorts of buildings that I bet are reasonable to some entrepreneurs if they wanted to come out here. I'll see. And this is not a stigma. This is an asset right now to have those empty buildings that you would be able to finance, I'm sure, generously through some sort of a community development program or project. You have quite a few empty facilities out here that I think people should come and take a look at.
We do. We have a lot of office space. We have some large facilities here, manufacturing areas that are fairly recent modern buildings that are vacant at this time. So that we do have a lot of area. As far as economic development money, we have through the state a revolving fund that we have in account. We've been in contact with the state just recently. They have another source of funding as far as economic development goes that the city can get a hold of at any time to further development. So there are money.
What's holding them back? What's holding these people back?
Getting people online and appreciating the area and what is available. There's a lot of room here. We've got transportation. We've got all it takes if we can just have them look at it.
You've got great, these roads are brand new out here. I can remember when you were working on that one for a couple of years. I came down 385 today. It is just a beautiful road. Your husband, by the way, works for the Burlington Norwin.
Yes, he does. Yeah. Yes, he does. He works on the section there. I think one of the reasons maybe people don't realize, they don't think Edgemont has anything to offer. Well,
wrong.
They are wrong. For one thing, we have very nice people and people who have lived here and many generations of families who have lived here.
Look at how they just took me into their home right here today,
yeah,
a total stranger.
I have no idea who you were till you walked in the office door today. But I'm willing to do anything to let people know that Edgemont is a good place to live. It's a safe place. Your kids can be out after dark and you don't have to worry about them. You can go take a walk and not have to worry about being mugged, which I do almost every day. It's a wonderful experience.
Caroline, you ever been mugged here? You've been here almost, what, 80 years?
Never.
Oh, we said it, didn't we? We were going to... Ever been mugged?
That's all right. No, I haven't been.
The hunting.
I'm not afraid. People wonder if I'm afraid, but I'm not. Not a bit.
We talked about the fishing. Hey, I can verify that. And you have all these reservoirs around here.
And we're developing. You know, they have a golf course here that they keep working on and making better every year. We have a good school. True, it's not large, but they offer everything that a child needs to get a good education. We have sporting, you know, things for them to do, music.
How about hunting?
Hunting is wonderful here, and we have lots of out-of-staters East River people come to hunt in western South Dakota.
I had to steer around all the deer today. I'm not kidding.
We're deer and antelope, turkeys, elk, anything you want to hunt. There is close by or you know, in the area, in the Black Hills. It's a wonderful place to be.
And you have this hot water, and I know maybe some of you don't remember it, but the people I visited with at the spa, I call it the spa, you call it the...
Stone block.
And tragically, folks, this may get torn down, and historically it's a beautiful old quarry stone put together building. But last time I was there, we were talking about that hot water, and it was originally, what, 140 degrees, one of the wells, if I remember correctly, and the people heated their house with it. I wish I had them here at the table today. They simply ran the water from the city main where it came out. They ran it through what's called a coil, a baseboard radiation. That just baseboard radiation went around the house, and they said the only problem was when they installed it, it got too hot in the winter time, and they had to figure out a way of putting a valve on it so they could reduce the flow. But that helped. The reason they really did it was to cool your hot water down that you have an enormous abundance of. And I imagine some sharp entrepreneur is going to figure out what he could also do with that enormously warm water that you have.
We've had different thoughts come along. Nobody has developed it yet as far as hydroponics, greenhouse type of facilities, these sorts of things. Where we do have the hot water can furnish the heat. We have a number of buildings. The city has several of their facilities that are heated with the hot water now. Absolutely no expense.
Wow.
So, you know, there are a potential for a number of different developments from this hot water.
And we know you have wonderful people because you just invited us in. The facilities are nice. And I want to ask you about the weather. Could it be any worse than we have in eastern South Dakota with 40 below and 10-foot snow drifts?
Huh? Oh, it's better. We usually don't get as much snow, though we do get our fair share. Our weather fluctuates. Most of the time it's very temperate. We have several what we call snowbirds who go to Arizona, and there have been times when they wish they'd stayed in Edgemont because the weather was better than in Arizona.
Talk about the weather, because, I mean, it gets, in our part of the state, it really gets cold. We get a lot of snow.
I think probably the greatest thing we have going for us here is our dry climate. We do not have the humidity that you have East River, and consequently this contributes to a more moderate type of climate and very comfortable.
Maurice, I'm glad you said that. I've always had sinus problems, and humidity really, it just really messes me up. My eyes get black down here. The last couple of days I have felt super. I know why. Because of the dryness.
This is true. We have a number of people comment that move here or come visiting how their sinus problems seem to clear up immediately here.
Now, I know that you guys out there listening right now probably says, oh, sure, the Chamber of Commerce has paid Chuck Anderson some huge sum to come out and some sort of a tourist thing. Absolutely not, right? I have picked this town out because I can't understand why it isn't a town of about 30, 40,000 by now.
Well, you know, that's true. You walked into the paper office today and asked to speak to the editor. Of course, she wasn't there, and I lucked out. But that's true. I didn't know you, but I'm very, like I said before, glad to say the good things about Edgemont. I've been here for 36 years, and my kids are being raised here, and I hope they want to stay, and I hope there's something for them to stay here for.
As a councilman, you know, you could be a cosmopolitan area. You've got to travel a long way in any direction to reach a town of any kind of size. if you grew even somewhat, you would become the shopping center.
This is true. As we've discussed, we have a lot of things to offer. We have a solid community here, and I'm hopeful that we will have growth and development. I don't personally really want to see an explosion. I would like to see slow, controlled growth that we can handle and develop with. And
we're about 900 people right now, right?
Correct. And, you know, we've got potential to grow tremendously.
I almost said that almost like I lived here.
You bet. We appreciate it. But I think that there is a lot in the area to be offered. And anyone that moves here, I feel, would be very comfortable.
The one thing that you have, again, that I like about Edgemont, and I know this must just sound like Promote Edgemont Day. Well, maybe it is. Doggone it, because it's a part of South Dakota that's taken it on the chin for almost 50 years. And it's about time, number one, you have all of the advantages of the Black Hills. But like I said, you don't have to wind in and out of those hairpin U-10 turns, and it takes you 30 minutes to go 2 miles. You've got some beautiful roads here.
This is correct. We've got a tremendous highway system here. We are within, we'll say, 5 minutes of being in the hills, if you want, right into the timber and, yeah, and that. So we're right here. Edgemont, the edge of the mountain, here's where we're at.
I would love to see a traffic pattern, Trudy, on this Highway 18, because I know whenever I travel west, I'm on my way to Denver right now, you have to go through Edgemont. I mean, you can go some other directions, but you're going out of your way, and any traveler from Canada on down realizes this is the best route. I'm surprised that other people haven't realized that.
The Coloradoans have realized it as they go through the hill. They go by here in droves every year, all year round, not only for the summer in the hills, but they also come for the skiing in the hills that we have. And it's not that far away to go skiing. I mean, there are a lot of things very close by to Edgemont that you could probably get to quicker than you could by living in a large city.
So there we have it. You've got great road facilities. You have a great traffic. Thank you, Caroline. She's pointing at the clock. And we do have about 60 seconds later to go, where I have to wrap up. It's a wonderful community. And I've just thought for years of doing a show here to mention to the people on our side of the state that don't believe everything that you read about Edgemont, right, Caroline?
That's right. It isn't true. We have a lot of good here.
And you wanted to say you're very proud of the schools, and let's make sure that we get that in before we close.
Well, I am proud of our schools, and when I think back over all the years and know all of the graduates that have gone on to a higher education that have made good, and they never had a bit of trouble getting into another school, into a college for higher education.
If you want to give a phone number for either the Chamber of Commerce or for the mayor or for yourself, Maurice, being a councilman on the city council, this is their chance, because I know we have got to have piqued some interest in some entrepreneurs in eastern South Dakota, or maybe some of the other states. Because I'll tell you, quite frankly, if it wouldn't have been that I had three daughters, I still have two in high school, one in college, man, I'd be looking at this country out here. So give them a phone number if they want to visit.
Well, I think probably the best place to contact right now would be the newspaper. I'll let Trudy give you that telephone number.
Give it nice and slow, Trudy.
Okay, it's 605.
That's too fast.
Oh,
605. That's right.
662-7201.
And let's say that one more time, because the guy was reaching real fast for that pencil. 605.
662-7201.
And you're going to reach the newspaper called?
The Edgemont Herald Tribune.
And if they also use that phone number, they can get a year's subscription for $20, right?
If you live in the state of South Dakota.
Well, folks, it's been my privilege to broadcast this program from Edgemont, South Dakota. I've been wanting to do it for years. They're friendly people, and they're the best kept secret in, I'm sure, the entire Midwest. Say goodbye to the folks, Caroline.
Goodbye, and I'm so glad you came.
Hope to see you soon in Edgemont.
Thanks, Chuck, and we appreciate it.
Next week's show will either be at Brighton, Colorado with cowboy poet and humorist Baxter Black, or it might be preempted with a show we will be doing tomorrow in Winnipeg, Canada, where I will be accompanying the South Dakota State University 38-piece drumline as it performs at the Grey Bowl, which is Canada's professional football equivalency of our Super Bowl. And if you've ever seen SDSU's drumline, you know they will be a credit to the United States and to South Dakota. We enjoyed visiting with the residents of Edgemont today, which is located in the extreme southwestern part of South Dakota, actually only miles away from Wyoming and Nebraska. We wish them well and hope that all of that hot water, as it comes out of the ground free, may find some large vegetable or flower farmer that would like to put a greenhouse over all that free heat for a new wintertime growing season. From Edgemont, this is Chuck Anderson saying have a safe and successful week. Bye for now.